we were talking about.
Psukim in Yeshaya, Perek Nun, and Yirmiyah Perek Gimel. Basically, the context was, since we were talking about issues, I say relationships, and I was trying to, suggest that the relationship of Klal Yisrael to the Ribono Shel Olam is sometimes spoken of in terms of Eved and Adon. You know, that already is also very explicit in the Torah. A ben and av also, and then, not explicit but implicit, certainly the understanding of Chazal, and this is explicit in parts of Nevi'im and Ksuvim, also the marital relationship. And that's the whole point, the seeming contradiction between Yirmiyah and Yeshaya, as much as the relationship can be a stormy one, any long-term relationship is likely, at some point to encounter challenges, frictions, etc. It would appear that the relationship between Klal Yisrael and the Ribono Shel Olam is an irrevocably permanent, enduring one, whereas the relationship of Ish v'Ishto, as much as it forms an existential bond, is one which is, sadly, but necessarily, need time again, and that's why we've spent, a bunch of weeks just going through these topics, because I really do think it provides, an important background. We're pretty much, at the end of it, but, we'll go on to more regular topics, but, I think that this, these two paradigms, really require, that that we understand that, with as much depth as we can, each of these relationships and what it is that makes them different. So we've been pursuing the concept of Ish v'Ishto, and I've made a bunch of allusions to different perspectives. I thought I'd take a couple of minutes just to read, number one, a couple of the actual formulations, and then to get back to analyzing why the relationship between Klal Yisrael and the Ribono Shel Olam is so different, even based on the considerations, that justify, the capacity to terminate, even as intense a relationship, an ideal relationship, as a marital one. So with respect to that, I just wanted to begin, again, these are all with just to, put on the formal record some of the formulations that we've been hinting at. So, firstly, just in terms of earlier Makoros, the Sefer HaBatim, you're right, we don't have any Finkelsteins here today, so Asher is not here either. But the Sefer HaBatim, which is one of the Rishonim, not so well known, Rab David Kochavi, he wrote mostly Perushim on the Rambam, Halachic Perushim, but also weighs in, on Tamei Mitzvos. And again, it's very hard to get a hold of the Sefer. Maybe Binyamin, has access. But in the kind of Minyan Mitzvos of the Sefer HaBatim, who's one of the Chachmei Provence, he always has very interesting things to add, to the mix. And, historically, they've always been very attuned with the kind of things that I like to accentuate, like in the beginning of the years. We had one, everybody will remember in the beginning of Chulin and the beginning, who were here, and the beginning of Bava Basra, we were able to invoke the position of Sefer HaBatim. So I, again, you have to have access to it. I was pretty sure that it was going to, be, inspiring and helpful. So that's one of the good things about the Shitas Kamoi is he provides these kind of, convenient citations. So in the beginning of the Masechta, I think you should have put it in the end of the Masechta, but in terms of Daf Tzadi, so the Sefer HaBatim's his take on the mitzvah of Gerushim really it does include a lot of the issues that we've been discussing. So I want to get that on the record. Nitzor Reish Chav Gimel goes by the Rambam. Shenitztaveinu Lagarish Mishi Yirtzu Lagarish Biksav. That's exactly a quote of the Rambam. Vu Amar Yisbarach, the Kosev LaSefer Krisus. But then he says, Inyan Kavanas Mitzvah Zu Mivuar Shazel L'Tikun Seder B'nei Adam. Meaning, it's not a... Again, of course, it's a sad b'di'eved, you know, that you know that it's necessary, but the necessity, given the reality, is what he characterizes as tikkun seder b'nei adam, v'ofen amidasam b'mesh yesh bo min ha-tikkun u'shleimus ha-zivug, which is exactly what we have been suggesting. I was suggesting it even in terms of the initial parshanut, and that is that gerushin is basically a kiyum in Ishus. It's not, you know, the polar opposite. It's the polar opposite in direction and everything else. But it's not, you know, despite Kedushas Ishus, there's something called Gerushin. There may be that view as well. Get to that. But on the contrary, it's like an investment in Kedushas Ishus itself. Yeshua Mishum Tikun Ushleima Sabibu. Ki lefamim titorer sina besiba v'shalo besiba. Sometimes, you know, irrational breakdown, you know, of the relationship, and sometimes there are good reasons. Bein ish l'ishto v'tischazek ha'eva ha'hi'ad she'itztarech she'yarchikena o yakena o yahargena. That sounds a little bit, you know, off the charts, but okay. O yamdu kol yimeim bin mastema, meaning they're either, you know, either something terrible is going to happen or they're going to live, you know, in a state of hostility, you know, forever, and obviously that's very tragic. This, you know, which should have been an idyllic existential bond, you know, has turned into, you know, either at minimum an imprisonment, you know, or worse. V'yeze hefech kavanas Hashem bebriya. The gam im lo yirchakena min hashchiva yazera, right, bilti nachon. And even if the physical relationship were to continue, he's saying, in absence of, you know, the, you know, perspective of mutual respect and kedusha, you know, that somehow that, you know, has impact on whether this is a mystical impact, you know, on Zera Pagum, we saw the other day, or it just means you're raising children. Of course, the psychologists, you know, have picked up on this in the last century. You know, it's a, you know, in every culture, this is, you know, a debate. You know, what's better for a family, for children, you know, to live in an environment with their two parents, you know, or, you know, it, you know, is that preferred when you know the environment is itself, you know, filled with tension, you know, and maybe worse. And of course, there's no simple answer. You know, this is something that always needs to be weighed. So he, I think he's talking more on the mystical side, but either way, yeah, Zera Bilti Nachon, you know, it's true in both senses. Kvar yadata mash omru bibnei grusha salev, which is why we're touching that sugya, both here in Gittin and the sugya, of course, in the Dharm. I still want to speak a little about that tomorrow. The Dharm chafum at base. Lefikach hayu mishalmos torasenu, mishlemos rather torasenu, she yuchal legarish osa lelo siba ulelo davar lekavanasha kasav. So it's again exactly what we, you know, have been looking for, meaning not the view that says, you know, that even what appear to be the more flexible or liberal or, you know, baseless grounds of divorce are in fact, you know, reflection of something, you know, more problematic, like we're talking about some of the mafarshim. But on the contrary, it's mishlemos torasenu and tikkun azivug and so on. It's all an investment in the marriage that he can be megarish lelo siba lelo davar ulelo kavana. Rabosenu akdoshim asu k'tas dikdukim kifi ma shaba hakabala mitis binyan gerushin leman yarecha inyan ki lefamim titorer mastema tamod yom yomayim o shavua v'achar yitpayes. Meaning, again, this is not the reason that you have kind of dialectical messages, meaning you have you know, criticism of Geirushin, you know, Sanui Lamokom and Lo Yimaher, you know, and all of those things, and, you know, the Mizbeach is Morid Demaos, you know, on the one hand, and then on the other hand, you have this license, and in some cases, you know, encouragement, is because, you know, the circumstances range. Sometimes, you know, there's, we're talking about something that is fleeting and, you know, very well might pass. Ubedoros achronim, kamo anashim gedolim, mosri ador v'ro bavanosenu, kilafi orach hagolus v'yosenu, am mifozar mifarad beinu amim, Gilas Esther, of course, right, nol dubanu midos megunos, kialde nachrim naspik, v'asu siyagim ugedarim, shaloy garish odam midaito, kim be'askamas acherim, kadesh she yishtadlu lasim atzas shalom b'neim. So this is very interesting, meaning what he's trying to suggest is that, you know, the Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom and other takanos, you know, that, you know, require, you know, daita and other things, there are two ways to look at that, basically. One way is like, you know, oh, the Torah has a, you know, perspective, let's say, and it's more laissez-faire, meaning it's more, you know, simply the volition of the husband, and it's less concerned, you know, with either, you know, the damage, you know, to one party or to the institution. And then, let's say, you know, the Chachamim came along, or in this case, Rabbeinu Gershom came along, you know, and he was metaken, you know, takanos, and changed the mix. But what the Sefer HaBatim is trying to say very, very carefully, and other Rishonim say this as well, is that, the general principles and the values, this dialectical, like, approach, you know, that on the one hand, you know, we want to salvage, you know, a marriage, because it is a davar shebikdusha, and it's a personal tragedy as well as a, you know, halachic bidyeved, you know, simply to, to allow that, you know, to deteriorate. But at the same time, you know, there's also an awareness that the alternative can sometimes be worse, both in terms of the individuals and the reputation of the institution, or children, if that's, you know, if that's part of the mix, etc. So what Sefer HaBatim is saying very, very carefully is that these values were always there, and because, you know, let's say there was a more single-minded focus on Torah and Torah values, and, you know, an internal kind of, you know, Kedushas Yisrael perspective, so there was, like, faith, confidence, in other words, that these, you know, opposing factors, and therefore a complex posture, would be implemented, you know, simply, you know, within the strict Doraisa, you know, rules. And what changed was not that there was greater sensitivity, you know, and greater awareness of the complexities, but there was less faith and less confidence because of pernicious other, you know, societal, you know, influences, you know, that the Din Torah would be sufficient, right, to project what the proper balance was. That's a very interesting, again, you have to read it a few times to catch it. So one more time. Ubedoros achronim kamo anoshim gedolim, mosrei hador, I think the Bali Masora, I think he means, v'ra'u bavanosenu, ki lefi orach hagalus, v'yosenu am mefozar, u'mefarad, bein amim, nol dubonu midos megunos, ki yaldei nachrim naspi. V'asu siyogim, v'gedarim, right, this was a way of kind of getting back to what was intended to be the Doraisa perspective, shelo yigaresh odam midaito, ki'im b'haskamas acherim, kedei sheishtadlu, lasim etz atzas shalom b'nei. Amnam l'shleimus b'nei amenu b'zman matan Torah, right, in the time of matan Torah, where I guess the, you know, complexity of the message was more accessible, was clearer, without, you know, the takanos or the charamim, lo hutzrach l'gedarim hahem. U'me'asher ha'inen ba'atzmo Eino mitzvah umora al tchula ra'a, or tzolomer hamagaresh lilo siba ubalo ervas davar, al kein amru sanui hamishaleach. V'chein b'pnei shezug rishon hu haroi lios b'neam ava v'reyos, v'chein mechayiv teva yashar, ma'asher godlu yachad b'imei hanurim. This is his weighing in and explaining, you know, the issue of zivug rishon. Rak lahotzi hamin. Ora zeba inyan nahu mitzvah kedei shiyase lezos hakavana. So, what he's basically—that's a very fascinating comparison. He's making reference to the famous comment of the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim, right? The Rambam, you know, talks about, you know, karbanos, and famously the Rambam says that, you know, the world, you know, kind of had developed like a certain, you know, expectation, you know, to have the outlet of, you know, karbanos, or have outlets like karbanos for avodah zarah, for other such things. And, you know, what the Torah did was they kind of channeled, you know, that impulse or those impulses, you know, those proclivities, instead of just, you know, negating them, you know, they channeled them, you know, in a way, you know, that was an acceptable, you know, davar shebikdusha. Of course, this is a very, again, famous comment, a very controversial comment of the Rambam, and one which, you know, the Ramban, for example, in the beginning of Vayikra, his Pershal HaTorah, you know, is very, very critical of, because it makes it sound like karbanos are b'dieved, you know, they're a concession to man's, you know, inability, you know, to focus, you know, spiritually without, you know, certain kind of props. Again, I don't want to get into all that right now. The Ritva in his, you know, in his critique of the Ramban tries to kind of justify, you know, the position of the Rambam, but not for now. But the comparison, what he's basically saying is something that the Geirushin, in other words, in a way is a concept, but the Nimshal is very fascinating. What he's basically saying is that, you know, Geirushin in some respects, you know, is not an ideal, but it, you know, it is a concession to the reality, you know, that, you know, people can be rancorous, you know, and that, you know, feeling, you know, imprisoned, or closed in, you know, not having options, you know, can create a certain kind of, you know, desperation, etc. You know, that is worse, and therefore, as a concession of an unhappy reality, the Torah found a more ideal way, you know, to kind of restore the balance. Umishigarish ishto rishona yored yoresh ikar mitzvah hu elav hanos kufal. This is another nugget of the Sefer Batim. All of these, as you can see, are really insightful. But again, the bigger takeaway here is that Geirushin, you know, with whatever, you know, sad and unhappy, you know, and kind of bidyeved status it has, is a kiyum, you know, in the ishus itself. And then he adds, umishi garish ishto rishona, despite, you know, the expectation, you know, of a greater investment and greater habituation and so on and so forth. Yoresh she'ikar ha-mitzvah ha-hi elav lahanaz gufo. Right? That reflects that to begin with, this is also the other idea, and that is that it's not just, you know, the circumstance that exists in the present, you know, that, you know, better to remedy it, you know, than to allow it to continue and to fester, but that in some respects this also reflects, you know, that even, you know, earlier, right, the foundation, of this marriage, which should have been, more davrusha b'kedusha, really wasn't that way at all. Yorash ikar mitzvah hu elav hanaz gufo ulay natan libo ba'acheret. Amnam imhi prutza orad. Of course, the other side of it is ad sheni ochal adurima az am rabasenu shemitzvah legarsha. Val kiyotze bazeh ba'elus. Sorry, tia hamitzvahs gerushin ka'achas min hamitzvos letoeles hanimshach mehen. So in that sense, it's a mitzvah because it provides, one way or another, if there's behavior that is deserving of gerushin, or if there's behavior that dafka isn't, but that reflects that to begin with this ishus, wasn't proper, it wasn't built on the proper foundation to begin with. One way or another, this is a toeles hanimshach mehen. But then, of course, he adds, since he's writing a perush on the Rambam, and, as we've noted, as much as the Rambam deals with these issues, he deals with them internally within the marriage and gerushin, but he doesn't think that's what mitzvahs gerushin and minyan tayag is. So that, in the end, after all these very insightful comments, he adds, "Afa b'shein ikar mitzvah zula zosa kavana ki inyan mitzvah hu sheigarish mishi yirtza legarish b'ksav yalpi edin." That's what the Rambam really holds is the actual mitzvah. Vazeya gamkein mishleimos haTorah, and here it overlaps a little bit on the chinuch. He says, of course, that too has its own benefit. Shim lo yitzarech rak sheyotziana mibeso, o sheyomer b'fnei edim ein at ishti, imashech mizeh hefseid gadol bein bnei adam, ki kvar kasavnu sheyitorer riv yamod yoma yomayim ve'efshar sheyit payes. Right, so then he'll feel badly, and even if there hasn't been an interim marriage and there's no problem of matzah grushaso beiser, of course there would be in the case of kohen, but otherwise, since they've, this is also psychological truth, right? People have dug their heels in, and it's very difficult for someone, to admit an error. So he's, angry, he's acting precipitously, and then, even if technically, he can reverse things, or she, whatever, but, lichvodo la yachzirena. O lai gamhi lo titratze bekach. Right? And certainly we wouldn't blame her, right? Ulezos hakavana tikni rabosenu. I kept mentioning this earlier, I just hadn't seen this Sefer Batim. Get Mekusha Lakoi. Right? So, of course, the Chinuch also says this is about slowing him down, making sure he's not, being impetuous, not acting rashly. Right? But the Get Mekusha, of course, Get Mekusha is particularly important because there's no Machzi Grushasa Behater at all. Mipnei Sheniachala Haxi Grushasa. Okay. So, that is the Sefer Batim, and that's, I say, a Rishon. What he says is far more complex and far more along the lines of what we've been discussing, than even the Sefer Chinuch says part of this, but Sefer Chinuch definitely has it more on the, it's his choice, it's his volition, it's his right, etc. So that's the Sefer Abad. The other thing I wanted to bring to your attention is I mentioned that the Rav speaks about this issue in Family Redeemed. So he has this passage here, which is very interesting, which mostly says what I've been talking about in terms of Kedusha, just says it a little bit differently. But I just wanted to read. He has actually two interesting formulations. So again, these are presentations that he made. They put it together, in a book. In other words, they found they had the Kisvei Yad in the family. Had them, and then they put together on different themes. He didn't write it as a book, and he didn't write it necessarily, to be published. So there's no expectation that this represents, the Rav's comprehensive view on this topic. So the fact that there is a certain emphasis and maybe other things missing is probably, something, not methodologically, to be disturbing at all. But either way, you know, Kedarko, it's very insightful. So he has two, you know, perspectives on divorce here. One is, Judaism does not recognize the principle of indissolubility of marriage. This is on page 61. We do not consider marriage an irrevocable commitment, and we sanction divorce as a legitimate means of terminating the marriage vow. However, one may point to the covenantal character of marriage, which implies the element of constancy. Whereas erotic love is whimsical and transient, the marriage based on ethical norms of constancy introduces permanence and sameness. If this is so, why was divorce not rejected by Judaism as undermining the covenantal structure of the marriage community? Meaning, in a word, like, how could there be divorce? The answer to this problem, so he has two interesting answers, should be sought at two levels, the philosophy of the personality and the philosophy of the sacred. Okay, this is more like the Rav, this is more terminological, but what they mean is the following. The first one is actually very interesting, and I think open to, you know, some question. It's certainly partially true and insightful, and I think it's interesting to think about whether or not, you know, it's fully, you know, obvious or fully, it's something everybody would agree to. So what is that? First is the philosophy of personality. There's a dialectical character to the human personality, the noumenous and the kerygmatic. So noumenous means, they also translate here, noumenous means something that is kind of ineffable, like, you know, very inaccessible, you know, something that's there, but you can't, by definition, you can't really define it or articulate it. You know, it doesn't make it less real, it just makes it, you know, an aspect that is, you know, kind of beyond, you know, articulation. Whereas the charismatic is more like, the more superficial part of man, the interactive part of man, not the, you know, chadre chadarim, you know, the, you know, kodesh kadashim of man. So this is basically what he says. The numinous is the lonely, mysterious Adam who never met Eve, who can never commit himself to the other self, since he does not step out of his unique seclusion. Right? Does not care to become acquainted with the vow. He is inner-directed, and his existence expresses itself in a continuous moment of recoil and withdrawal. A lot of these phrases and terminology, like, very much part of the Rav's general vocabulary and derech ha-chashiva, you know, in general about the religious experience. The charismatic personality, in contrast, is lovesick, communion-questing. He's eager to deliver a message to the other self. He tries to abandon all barriers, separating him from the person who stands alongside him. He wants to engage in a dialogue and communicate with Eve. Numinous Adam is mute. Charismatic Adam finds speech as a great means of attaining a communal existence. All human institutions that necessarily embrace two or more people are the outgrowth of creative activity of charismatic, so it's called, like, you know, the social animal, Adam. Numinous, lonely man is not involved in any social commitments that charismatic Adam takes on. Former always remains aloof for himself, lonely and free. Adam and Eve became wedded partners, yet only the charismatic personality took the vow of fidelity and constancy. Numinous Adam and Eve never contracted matrimony, since they never met and were never cognizant of each other. So this depiction is very fascinating, and you can probably see where it's going. Oh, well, I'll tell you where it's going. Marriage, notwithstanding its covenantal character, is not an institution of absolute worth. There's an objective bond, yet it is confined to the charismatic, even Adam, who can standardize and objectify their experiences. It does not reach into the very core of personality, which remains a mysterium, right? A subjective experience inexpressible and outside of all media of externalization, objectification. Only social Adam and Eve are wedded. Lonely Adam and Eve have never joined this community. Therefore, marriage is changeable because it does not embrace the whole of man. Only a part of it is engaged in this institution, and that is why disengagement is permissible. Numinous man terminates the social commitment of charismatic man. If the vow of fidelity did embrace all phases of the existential drama, then marriage would be absolute and hence indissoluble. As a matter of fact, the metaphysical betrothal of the charismatic community to God, and he says Derech Agav, he's trying to contrast it, but of course it's, you know, it's relevant to the question as I posed it, you know, why, based on the pasuk in Yeshaya, like, what's the reason for the difference? So he's quoting the psukim of Vayirastich li liolam b'tzedek u'b'mishpat, I will betroth you unto me for the faithfulness, can I be brought the psukim in Hosea. The prophet himself says, I will betroth you forever, you shall know the Lord. Why is this betrothal different from the ordinary marriage, which can end in divorce? Why is this wedlock between God and Israel eternal and can never shake off the trammels of divine law? Because the union of man and God is all-embracing. It penetrates every phase of existential adventure. Numinous, lonely man weds himself to the numinous, lonely God, right? And communion is established. Not only between an objectified, externalized I and thou, a lonesome existence gives itself, unites itself with its lover. There's a fusion of finite life with infinity, and this union or fusion is not limited to a surface experience, but involves everything in man excluding nothing. God and man are united undividedly and hence eternally. This is why Yeshaya asked the famous question. Here's where he quotes Nun Aleph, right? Thus saith the Lord, right? You know, where is the bill of your mother's divorcement? Where have I have put her away? The bond between God and Israel cannot be terminated in divorce. So, of course, this is the first reason. The interesting thing to think about is, like, you know, to what extent is that really true? Of course, to some extent, you know, everybody has a kind of, you know, Rishus HaYachid, you know, which remains his own. No question about that. I think I mentioned the other day that, you know, in the Sheva Brachos, you know, we, even after, you know, the Nisuin, or in context of Nisuin, depending on whether you make the Brachas Nisuin, you know, before or after, you know, we don't only say Mesameach Hasan Imakala, we continue to say Mesameach Hasan Vichala, and, you know, in the marriage, there are elements of unity, and there are elements of separate roles, and there are just elements of that remain in terms of privacy. So what the Rav is trying to describe here, you know, certainly relates to that, you know, to that part of it. Whether or not, you know, that makes one comfortable, you know, with the if you just read this passage, you know, it sounds like it's like a split, and, you know, there's no existential bond here. There's a bond, you know, in the social part of man. So I think that a lot of the dinam of Baal Ki Ishto Ishta Kabal that I was referring to previously, and let's say it this way, the formulations of some of the Rishonim, you know, that particularly accentuate that bond, you know, and I'm speaking, there are a bunch of them, but, you know, most famous among them maybe, you know, the Hakdama of the Ravid, you know, to the Bali Nefesh. You know, the Ravid wrote a book called Bali Nefesh, you know, Hilchos Nida, other things like that. So in the Hakdama, you know, he talks about, you know, the origins of man and, you know, why the, according to Chazal, you know, the different stages and phases of creating, you know, man and woman. And Ramban, again, there are some differences, but Ramban is Perush al Torah, also in Parshas Bereishis, speaks about the same thing. Like, why is, you know, what's the point of the view in Chazal that, you know, Ola Bedaito, that the Ribbono Shel Olam originally created, you know, either was thinking of or actually did create, you know, man as like a two-headed, you know, being, and then he split them, and then he, you know, brought them back together. Like, what's the point of all of that? Like, the Maya Nafkamina, if you want to say. But you don't mean in a pragmatic way, you mean it more like in a conceptual way. So both Ramban and the Ravid speak about, you know, the perspective is that, in a way, you know, the bond of a husband and wife is kind of like, you know, rediscovering, you know, the initial, you know, unity. So, like, how that fits in, again, I don't think it's a stira, I'm just sort of trying to make it clear. I think this is a very powerful point. Just that if you read the passage, it's more like, oh, 50%, you know, the marriage is to 50%, and then there's another 50%. And, you know, even more, since that numinous part, you know, is clearly, you know, the more in keeping with the Tzelem Elokim part, even if you look exactly how he structures it. So, you know, you could get the impression, you know, that, you know, it's kind of downgrading a little bit the idyllic and, you know, integrated bond I don't think that's the goal of it, but that's, I'm a little uncomfortable with the fullness of the formulation, even though I like, right, the basic idea. And I think even if that part of it is, you know, smaller, it's still an interesting and good, you know, explanation. But anyway, that's something to think about. The second part, the second explanation is exactly, or close to exactly, what I've been discussing all along, and that is the idea that, you know, Ishus is based on Kedusha, and you know, what looks like, you know, walking away for trivial or frivolous reasons, you know, is in fact, you know, based on principle that the high standards of sanctity, you know, can be breached, you know, even in a, you know, even in a, you know, even in an indirect fashion. Secondly, philosophy of the sacred. Marriage is a sacred institution. The term kedushin and sanctification attests to the quality of sanctity which is implied in marital contact. This is on page 63, by the way. It is endowed with a quality which is both remedial and redeeming. The element of the sacred is an outgrowth of the sacrificial action performed by the married partners when there's an act of withdrawal, the hour of Cardinal Madison, concupiscence. Okay. Sacrifice and holiness are synonymous concepts in Judaism, you know, Prisha and Kedusha, basically. Kedoshim tiyu, Prushim tiyu. Of course, the more alluring the vision of the conquest, the stronger the temptation, the more intoxicating the performance, the greater and more heroic the act of retreat. Basically, the idea of Kedushin, skip a little bit. The institution of merit makes possible for the individual to achieve a sufficiency of body discipline that lends him the quality of sanctity. The very marriage agreement is based on the idea of the sacred. Both partners are committed to attainment of a sacred relationship. If the latter is not achieved, the personal moment, which is identical with sanctity, is lacking. If the marriage institution is infused with sanctity, then it may become desecrated. Judaism has always maintained holiness is not something objective inherent in an object, prevailing independently of the way this particular sacred object is treated. We deny the idea that there's sanctity per se, a metaphysical endowment which persists irrespective of man's relationship to the object. Such an approach to the idea of sacred would border upon fetishism and primitive taboos. Sanctity is born out of man's actions, experiences determined by the latter. Very instance, man adopts a coarse attitude towards the hallowed object. This is one thing I want to get back to. The moment of sacredness is eliminated. Sanctity expresses itself not in the formal quality of the object or the institution, but in a relationship between the latter and man. It's an experience rather than an endowment. If something is not experienced, the sacred, right, then it forfeits its uniqueness and numinous character. With regard to property, talking about things that are yotze lechulin, me'ila, fine. The same principle applies to matrimony. If the marriage contract has been violated and an act of adultery committed, the covenantal sanctity of the marriage is dispelled and the latter is subject to dissolution. Divorce is only the formal validation of an act of disintegration which took place before. The conclusion of a process of profanation of the marriage which divested it of its permanency and constancy. Basically, divorce is warranted only in cases of adultery. However, we must remember there are various degrees of adultery. There are more vulgar and more refined forms of adultery. Whenever husband or wife sincerely desire to terminate the marriage, an act of betrayal is committed. So he's saying it a little bit differently than I'm saying it, but it's the same in the bigger sense. It's pretty identical. I'm speaking of kind of the you know, the ishus can be a victim of its own high standards, and when you are lacking that mutual respect or standards or that sense of existential bond, you know, so then, you know, that's no longer the marriage. But Rav is saying more like, you know, that there's like an expansion of the concept of erva. It's, I'm saying not so much that, yeah, it's a different emphasis, but it's basically the same idea. He's expanding, you know, what constitutes pretty much erva. Only the inner commitment to each other and complete personal unity protects marriage from vulgarization and defilement, corruption of the sexual feeling manifesting itself in the dislike which one wedded partner feels toward the other, is considered an adultery since the element of faithfulness and dedication is missing from the marriage. The mere desire for separation and divorce implies treachery and an adulterous motif, where I'm saying it's more it's that, and it's also couldn't take place if there was like a certain mutuality and sanctity, you know, which is foundational. Anyway, that deprives marriage of its sanctity. Interestingly, then he talks about Beis Shammai, and he doesn't say anything about Beis Hillel, which is fascinating. He says, Mishnah Gittin, which discusses Torah's statement that one may divorce his wife, he founds Ervas Davar. So he quotes Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, and Rabbi Akiva. Then he says, Beis Shammai interprets Ervas Davar in the literal sense of adultery. Right? If the Bezin is unable to ascertain adultery, a divorce is not warranted. Ervas Davar is defined strictly in halachic juridic terms. Only legal blame is justified circumstances for divorce. Right? Whatever doesn't border on formal adultery cannot be taken into account as ground for termination of the marriage. Rabbi Akiva changes the semantics of Ervas Davar and raises its meaning to the moral level. Dissolution of a marriage is permissible if he desires another woman. This very desire is adulterous thought, which cancels the pristine sanctity of the marriage. A sinful wish, an inner betrayal of the wedded partner, desecrates the covenantal endowment of marriage, although in the eyes of society, the marriage appears to be perfect and partners blameless. It's not the juridic aspect that is decisive relative to the sacred covenant of matrimony, but rather the moral one. If his affections were alienated by an adulteress, if he has become estranged from his mate because she no longer attracts him, he does not cherish her companionship anymore, the dissolution has already begun, the marriage has already been desecrated and decovenantalized, the divorce formally concludes a process that set in long before that. So what's interesting is that he, you know, of course, Rabbi Akiva, Matza Isha, Na, Amen, this is good. The Beis Hillel part he doesn't, you know, relate to. That's, I say, I don't think, you know, that that's so significant, but again, the way I would say it is that, you know, if he's, you know, the capacity, again, to want to get divorced for such a reason, if it's not adultery, or it is a different kind of betrayal, and either way, even if you don't want to call that betrayal, you could certainly call it, you know, a shior in the absence of the requisite, you know, kedusha. So, as you can see, this is kind of the basic, you know, perspective. Here he doesn't speak about Beis Hillel, fine, but he also doesn't speak about the contrast to the relationship to the Rabbanu Shel Olam. So I do want to speak about that. My time's a little bit running out, but I would say that, yeah.
So, I mean, I was going to ask this in terms of the implications of the first formulation, but he references the I-Dao relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Reference to Buber, right?
The Rav used it a little. He doesn't really. The Rav uses I thou all the time. I mean, he was aware, you know, of Buber's, you know, but he, I don't think that that's how he typically uses it. You know, he wasn't. He didn't see Buber as a canonical figure, but I think he liked. You know, I thou. That was like part of his general, you know, vocabulary, like I said before, and, I don't think it has Buberesque content. That's a great question, because
in the first formulation, it sounds like the second type of relationship is more social, but his implication is that the I-Dao relationship exists in that relationship, meaning the first
in one, in the social, are you talking about the first one now?
The first relationship doesn't have the I-Dao, presumably the second one does. And then
the social part, and right. Not the numinous part.
Right, right.
Correct.
And if that's a reference to Buber, then he's saying that there is something more ambitious in the second, the charismatic relationship.
Is more? Ended. Yeah, I'm just. I don't think.
Okay.
Yeah. No. As I say, it's a fair question, because, like, in the world out there, you know, this is a so. But I don't. You know, the Rav knew it, of course, but he wasn't. That wasn't his context of use of the term. So, what's interesting, of course, is what about the Rabbanu Shel Olam? And I think a strong case could be made. This is, you know, part of the Kodesh Elul, you know, and the bigger part of the relationship, which I want to get back to. But first, I just want to get a couple of, or at least one or two more formulations in. So maybe I'll leave it for the third time we speak about this. And that is that, you know, what he describes, which is a Kedusha. Basically, all kedusha is nitan, you know, l'me'ila or l'chilol. What I would say is, you know, that gufa is part of the difference, you know, in the relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In general, you know, he's emphasizing here, you know, the potential for pidyon in Kedusha and Me'ila. But there's a difference between, you know, Kedushas Damim and Kedushas Ben Kabayis, you know, and Kedushas Haguf. And typically, Kedushas Haguf is not Nitan Lepidyon. The more you deal in halachic terms with an intrinsic Kedusha, right, the more, like, irrevocable it is and less contingent upon or dependent, you know, upon, you know, the way that you relate to it. It's true that most human kedushos, you know, are nitan in some way or another, you know, lechilo. But I would say that, you know, in that respect, gufa, the relationship between Klal Yisrael and the Rabbon Shalom, you know, is different. I mean, the Rambam famously, you know, talks about kedushas hashchina, you know, as something which is not, you know, betela. This, of course, a famous, you know, view of the Rambam in Hilchos Pesach Bechira, where he talks about, you know, the difference between Kedushas Eretz Yisrael and Kedushas Yerushalayim and Beis HaBechira. Where the Rambam says that, you know, when it comes to Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, so, you know, there is a discussion in the Gemara, you know, about Kedusha Rishona, about Kedusha Shnia, you know, whether Kedusha L'Shaita, was Kedusha L'Yasid Lavo, or not. But says the Rambam, when it comes to Kedushas HaMikdash and Kedushas Yerushalayim, that is Kedushas HaShchina, and Kedushas HaShchina is not, you know, Betela, and that's why it's, you know, the Hashimosi, Afopi, you know, Sheshmumim Hu, you know, or Haim, you know, Bikdushasam Omdim, or something like that. If you look at the Rambam, Perigvan, Vilchos, Beis HaBechira, there's a Halacha, Yudgimel, Yudalim. So the Rambam basically, and then of course he, you know, the Chiddush of the Rambam is not so much that Kedushas Shechina, you know, is Eina Betela, you know, there. The Chiddush is to say that Kedushas Yerushalayim and Kedushas HaMikdash is Kedushas HaShechina, and therefore it's not Batal. But of course the formulation reminds us that that's, you know, the relationship to the status of the Ribono Shel Olam and any Kedusha, you know, that is kind of directly connected, you know, with, you know, the bond, you know, with him, is going to be an exception, you know, to this rule. In a sense, the need for Kedusha and Yirat Shamayim and so on is greater, right? And the risk of losing it or it not being enduring, you know, is less. And that's kind of what, you know, the Psukim and Amos, you know, mean. And that is that, you know, that we spoke about last week. And that is, you know, the ketzef, the kas, the sense of betrayal, the expectations, you know, when it comes to the relationship of the Rabbono Shel Olam and Knesset Yisrael is greater, you know. And at the same time, you know, they're, you know, I wouldn't say stuck in the relationship because that sounds like a negative thing, but, you know, there's always a guarantee that that relationship continues because it's a davar shebekedusha, but, you know, in the ultimate kedusha saguf, you know, kedusha sashchina in a betela, you know, sense. So even though the kas and the ketzef and the, you know, there could be ke'al manan, could be, you know, like, you know, a grusha, but you're never going to get, you know, a real dissolution because, you know, this is kedusha, which is not... A couple of years ago, we learned Chulin. We're talking about the Tmura Sugya in the beginning. But one of the things I was suggesting is that the Iser of Lo Yachli Fenu Velo Yamir is because of the offensive mentality that, you know, a Dover Shebekdusha is just about Nihug, you know, and nothing more, and therefore it's very substitutable. Like, you know, it's exchangeable. You know, it's basically, you know, what I call the mentality of interchangeable parts. You know, so Torah says, you know, whenever there's Kedushas HaGuf, at least all things being equal, your attitude should be Lo Yachlifenu, you know, Velo Yamir Oso. And that's why it's such a prominent place. It's really the end of, you know, Vayikra. It's like the ultimate expression of Kedusha. But kol shekein, you know, if we're talking about the relationship, you know, that is directly connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so, you know, that, you know, is partially, you know, an explanation for that phenomenon. I think there are other aspects of the relationship, too. My time's almost up, and I do want to get in one or two other the other formulations, so I'll get back to that maybe later. But just, you know, briefly, the role of tshuva, which I think I mentioned last week, the radak, in, especially in Yeshaya, but also partly in Yirmiya, but what that reflects, tshuva is part of the difference between human relationships and the relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I think also the role of the tzibur is a critical component. Meaning, you know, it's like the, you know, the psukim at the beginning of this coming week's parsha, Nitzavim, you know, Eis Asher, you know, the Eis Asher Einenu, the relationship between, the marital relationship between the Ribbono Shel Olam and Klal Yisrael, you know, was with the Klal, with the corporate Klal Yisrael, you know, Lidorei Doros. And that's why you can have a separate Haftacha in the Torah itself, you know, as Chazal understood it, that Torah would never be Mishtakachas, you know, from Klal Yisrael, no matter what. You can have, like, the Rambam coming up with something called the Chidush HaSmicha, where, like, you know, even if there's a break in the chain of Mesora, Ish mi pi Ish, you know, Ad Moshe Rabbeinu, or to use the language of the Rambam, Ad Beis Dino Shel Yoshua, Ad Beis Dino Shel Moshe Rabbeinu, that nonetheless, you know, the Chachmei Mesora of every generation kind of are the repository of that Mesora, you know, whether the chain is broken or not. There's some, like, you know, there are two ways for the chain to unfold. They can unfold through individuals, and then you need an unbroken chain, you know, from Moshe Rabbeinu to Yoshua, you know, to that individual. And then, sadly, in Jewish history, that line was disrupted. You know, but there's also kind of an idea that, you know, Torah was given to Klal Yisrael, and therefore, you know, Klal Yisrael is always, you know, always alive in some respect. And I think that's the pshat, in the Rambam. The Rambam says yearly, he's in the Chadesh, but I think that's where what he thinks it's about. And that's how there can be a haftacha that Torah will never be forgotten. And that's how we can speak about, you know, Eis Asher Yeshno Po V'Eis Asher Einenu. How can you make a bris, you know, with Dover Shalom Baliolo, with people who don't exist? But they do exist, you know. You know, Chazal say that all the neshamos of all the future, you know, generations of Klal Yisrael were there. That's fine. And probably what that also means, in addition, you know, to whatever it means, is that the bris was to corporate Klal Yisrael, spanning, you know, all generations. So I think that's also another perspective in this irrevocable bond between the HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael, is that, you know, if you have two people in a marriage, you know, and there can be an act of begida, you know, of betrayal, you know, that is mechalel, you know, the kedusha, and you know, even, you know, sometimes some actions cannot be pulled back. But when it comes to the relationship of Klal Yisrael and the Ribbono Shel Olam, what I'm saying is, number one, the institution of tshuva kind of kicks in and allows, you know, not only kapara, which might be enough, but it's, you know, a gift, but maybe even, you know, kind of the revision of history and the ability to come back, to pull back. Chazal say that, you know, there's something called, you know, tshuva meyira, which turns donos into shganos, and there's something called kedusha me'ava, marn pevav mebeis and yuma, that turns, you know, zdonos into schuyos, right? Something which we need to understand. But in the end of the day, that's, you know, that's kind of a reversion, not just the kapara, you know, but the ability to kind of rewrite or to revise, you know, the relationship. So that's a very big difference between, you know, two individuals in a marriage and Klal Yisrael and Ribbono Shel Olam in a marriage. But in addition to that, what I'm suggesting is this corporate idea is that you have Reuven and Sarah, and they're in the marriage, and you know their behavior, indelibly, can undermine or tarnish, that relationship. And that's what a Maisa Sota, does. But if it's Klal Yisrael and the Rabbonu Shel Olam, so even, if the totality of Klal Yisrael, in a particular generation, behaves in a certain way, there's still, a Klal Yisrael, Eis Asher Yeshno Po, V'Eis Asher Einenno, which is part of this bris. And, that is something, that just changes the calculus in how you look at, Begida or Chilul Kedusha, etc. So I think that the differences, and I think there are more than that, just go back even to when we started this discussion, the whole question kind of arises, because of the very strong, image of the relationship of Klal Yisrael and the Rabbonu Shalom in terms of, a marital, relationship. But, when I began speaking about this last week, I noted that there are, overlapping paradigms. We're also Banim Lamakom, and we're also, Avadim Lamakom. So, are these completely, independent, Eved and Ben, and Baal Ki'ishto, these are like completely independent dimensions, or of course they overlap. If we're talking about, breaking the bond, with Klal Yisrael, you can't break the bond of your children. And the way that you break the bond of an Eved and Adon is very different, as well. So in that sense, the differences are huge. And that's another aspect of it. Moreover, if part of the ability to break, the marital bond is a function of the volitional aspect of the marriage itself, and maybe the unilateral role of one party over that of the other in terms of engendering of the ishus, meaning this is an act of will, and it's also something that is reposed in the husband's jurisdiction. So all of that also, is different in the relationship between Klal Yisrael, and the Rabbonu Shel Olam. Of course, the question of volition or will or bechira in that relationship is very complicated. Kafa Leim Har Kegigis, the idea of Bishvila Torah Shenikra Reishis and Yom Hashishi Ilav, Kabbalah Satora Hayoma, the world would be returned to a state of Tohu Vavo. We say Gadol Mitzuva Viosa Mimishena Mitzuva Viosa. Bali Tosis and Kiddushin explain that psychologically. Somebody feels, that they're obligated to do something. It's more of a burden. It's more difficult for them. Therefore, Gadol Mitzuva Viosa, it's more impressive. But it's very possible that it's just a din in its own right, meaning it could both be true. And that is, being a mitzvah is a crucial, aspect of this bond, and of this relationship. So in a way, the concept of, it was engendered as an act of will, and therefore, even when we're unhappy about it, it can be undone, in that same way. There remains like a kinyan, aspect of it. That's not completely true, when it comes to the bond. Again, we think that's good. We think it's an act of chesed, that we're mitzuvim, and that there's kafalem har kegigis and all of these things. But in the end of the day, the ability to break the bond, which is contingent upon all these other, dimensions, is just absent completely you know, in the case of the relationship between Klal Yisrael and the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. And of course, the psychological aspect, you know, doesn't help you, you know, here, you know, either. First of all, you know, Atem, you know, Hem Mircha, and, you know, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam is, you know, the psukim that we just read. You know, Huas, you know, Atem Asisem, you know, Oso Chativa Achas Be'olam, and he made you Chativa Achas, you know, Be'olam. So it's on the one hand, it's a more, you know, it's a relationship which is absent some Bechira. It's Nasav and Ishma, but it's also Kafalei Marke Gigas. And at the same time, it's also kind of a dual relationship. And that's what the Gemara says in, you know, in Brachos and Davav, you know, that in the Tefillin of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, it says, you know, Miyak Amcha Yisrael Goyachad Ba'aretz. It's all these elements that make for possible Gerushin, you know, in Ishus, are lacking in that relationship. But let me make it clear. I don't mean just in a technical way. Like, these are the dimensions, these are the elements, you know, and they're lacking, or the opposite. And what I'm really trying to call attention to is that as much as the bond between husband and wife is, like, ambitious and aspirational, you know, and reflects a kind of, even like a certain, you know, tzelem elokim or transcendence, you know, in man, and that's the difference between Jewish marriage and Benoach marriage, again, structurally, I'm not talking about actual relationships, but what they should be, as much as that's true, the point is that the, you know, the dynamic between Klal Yisrael and the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, you know, in terms of that concept of transcendence, is of course on a whole, you know, added, you know, light years, you know, added, you know, dimension, and these, you know, indicators, which are play so much of a role in the possibility of Gerushin. You know, on a human level, their absence is just an indication of the unusual bond, almost like the impossible and yet, you know, necessary bond that, of course, by definition, you know, has to be irrevocable. I mean, the whole purpose of life is to, you know, be omed lifnei Hashem, to have a bond with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, you know, that's tem advekim b'Hashem Elokeichem chayim kuchem ayom, you know, v'chay b'hem. That's, you know, the ability to attach ourselves to some sort of relationship with Him, which is philosophically so difficult or impossible, but which is humanly and existentially so necessary. And doing that through limud haTorah, through kiyum haMitzvos, etc., all of that make the possibility of walking away, you know, this being a transient relationship, you know, just completely inconceivable, you know, on any level. And therefore, you know, notwithstanding, you know, the mashal and the nimshal, you know, basically you get a whole different, you know, dynamic, one which we celebrate, you know, every day, and one which in particularly we have to reflect upon, you know, in you know, at the time of all Moedim, frankly, and especially in the run up, you know, to the Yom HaNaraim. At the end of the day, it's not just about, you know, as I said previously, neutralizing chataim, you know, looking for kapara and trying to guarantee, you know, another year of life. For sure, it's all about those things, but those are the smaller parts of it. The bigger parts of it are about reassessing the purpose of our life and therefore trying to reinvigorate and rectify, if our chisronos, our relationship with Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's really what tshuva is about, and that's what the Yom HaNaraim are all about. I just wanted to leave one just on the other side, again, something that doesn't have its analog. I mentioned a couple of times the Malbim. I just wanted to read a line or two from the Malbim, and from some of you took Rav Shamshon or Fall Hirsch to brunch, right? And some of you took Malbim? Who took the Malbim? You took the Malbim to lunch. Okay. So the Malbim says that, again, like others, he's troubled by, you know, this question, the ability to walk away so easily from a marriage, according to Beis Hillel, etc. So again, l'hasbir adavar mashi tachen shebnos Yisrael yu kalos sa'erach. This is the Malbim in Kitetze, Perakav Dalim Pasuk Aleph. Asher mira acheres na himena o sheknicha tavshilo she tatir hatorah legarsha. Of a mishpat Hashem emes kanal, meaning this seems like inconceivable, yet it's so, and therefore reconstructing it must be, you know, there must be an explanation for it. Ah, Ratz Hashem Yisbarach shebnei Yisrael yichyu yachad im nishoseim chaye ratzon velo chaye hechreach. This is an investment in living, you know, a joyous life, you know, generally. This is an interesting psychological point. Right, kozman shalotoved, right, kolachen sheyeshla, taspik lemano mizeh. The chashvo, well, this part I would have formulated a little differently, but shim yisacheres gam hilotia tova imena. Malbim actually, personal story is actually a very fascinating story. But the kolze, the kozman shelo girsha, bechreach uchaye ratzon. But that part of it, meaning he knows that he could walk away, and therefore he knows that when he's staying, you know, he's doing it as an act of his own will. But I would have just said it a little bit differently instead of, you know, thinking, ah, you know, even if I do that, who knows if it'll be any better. I would have said, you know, people sometimes accentuate their, you know, difficulties, you know, until they're confronted with choice, and then they, you know, begin to appreciate and see differently, you know, the positive aspects of their lives. Well, I would just say it a little bit differently, but basically the idea is the same. The kozman shegilur be'kreach uchayi ratzon, v'nazbir adavar b'mashal katan, im b'chritzu li'ish sheyeshev b'bayis yom echad, la'onesh yechashev lo. So you put somebody in, like, you know, quarantine. Right? So, oh, you have to stay home for a full day. But at the same time, u'mirtzono yeshev kalu b'bayis kama yamim, v'techashev lo od, like, la'oneg, Menachas, like, tell him you have a snow day, you know, and like he's thrilled to stay home. So, you know, because you just are looking at it, you know, in a very different way. And the truth is that some of you took Rav Hirsch out for brunch. One second. I think I put him here also. I didn't take him for brunch, but. Right, Josh Adam, and. Okay. We have already shown elsewhere, this is in the you know, Collected Writings, Volume 8. Okay, Josh knows it by heart. But he likes to call them the Gesammelte Schriften, right? Okay, in the Gesammelte Schriften it says, the very legal possibility of divorce has had the effect of increasing intimacy in Jewish marital life and has heightened the purity, right, and the happiness of Jewish family life. That's what he develops in the 8th chapter of the Collected Works. In particular, we noted the great esteem women have won in the nation. There's no doubt that the Torah relies on this esteem, and therefore with perfect confidence entrusts to the husband the decision to dissolve the marriage. This is so interesting, actually. This halakha prevailed for more than 2,000 years, and as a rule was not exploited. Hence, it was not a sign of progress when it became necessary to limit the husband's right as to prevent its misuse. And he's talking about the, you know, Cherem Rabbeinu Gershom, etc. So that, of course, is a total, that's almost like an echo of what we read in, you know, centuries earlier, you know, 5 centuries earlier in the Sefer HaBatim. You know, namely, it wasn't prog, and you have to understand Rav Hirsch, of course, is, you know, is always responding. I mean, he's speaking internally, but he's also responding, you know, to the challenges of the Reform movement, you know, are basically suggesting, you know, that, you know, Yahadus was crude, it was, you know, unfair, you know, to women. And then, you know, Rabbeinu Gershom was like a progressive, you know, who, you know, began to relax, you know, some of the shackles and so on. And what Hirsch is saying is that, of course, is not the way that we look at it. There's a certain dialectic, and there, you know, there's a certain wisdom, and, you know, and just objectivity to the halacha. And when you have takanos, typically the takanos don't represent, you know, progressiveness or liberalism. What they reflect is that, you know, the identical goals that were, you know, achieved, let's say, according to the base system, you know, when circumstances, leadership, etc., you know, were in a position to, you know, to implement the halacha more ideally. Sometimes that becomes corrupted for various historical, very different historical reasons, and then you need to kind of tweak or adjust. I mean, Prizbal is a great, you know, example of that too. We can talk about that another time. It's almost time for Prizbal. Right, Prizbal was a tweaking of, you know, of a certain yesod, etc. But again, this idea that of the Malbim, of Rav Hirsch, that somehow divorce is like, they say, Sefer Abatim, that, you know, divorce is a way of protecting the Kedushas HaYishuvos. In addition to the other formulations, the Malbim's a psychological fact, the Rav's and my suggestion, it's a Shir in Kedusha. All of these things don't apply to the relationship between Klal Yisrael and the Rabbanu Shel Olam. The idea of richuk or separation there, right, is never constructive. You know, and that again is part of the special dynamic. You know, if our purpose in life is to, you know, to, and what gives it meaning and quality, you know, is, you know, to be, you know, connected in whatever way is, you know, possible to transcendence, you know, then distance and a break in that contact, you know, is never an investment. There are other mechanisms, you know, to kind of encourage, you know, the reparation, you know, of the relationship. And that's why we have the Chos Tshuva and Chodesh Elul. And the idea that that is done not out of a sense only of fear, but out of a sense of the relationship, Anilu Dodi V'Dodi Li, the idea of Tshuva Me'ava in particular, which is the culmination of the Rambam and Chos Tshuva, is really consistent with that as well. Okay, sorry I went so long. We can adopt it.